Welcome to Common Ground YYC on Livewire Calgary.
Reviendra à la ville de Calgary. Calgary! Here come the
flames! Champions! Today, Calgary is a different place than it was yesterday.
All right, welcome to episode 10 of Common Ground. I'm your host, Josh White. I'm here with General Manager of Transportation, Michael Thompson. Welcome, Michael.
Hi, Josh. How are you doing?
Yeah, it's good to be here with you. It's been a little while since we catch up.
Yeah, so. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so why don't we just start with a little bit of an introduction about yourself.
Yeah.
You know, what your background is professionally and how you became GM, how long you've been GM of Transportation and what your job entails as GM of Transportation.
So I'm a civil engineer by background. And so I took a civil engineering degree at the University of Calgary, minored in transportation engineering, and started right out of university in the design planning field, working for a consultant, working on planning and design of transportation infrastructure. Really enjoyed it. And then I moved over to the city coming up on 5 years ago. Started out as the director of transportation infrastructure at the City of Calgary. So I looked after the construction of all the road projects, transit projects across the city. And then just over a year ago, I moved into the role of general manager and in an acting and then permanent position. And I've been doing that ever since. And so now looking, working with the team, looking after transportation across the city, whether it's pathways, sidewalks, roads, transit, you name it, it's underneath me here.
Yeah. So I just wanted to touch on that a little bit. You know, one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on was because, you know, I always look at the City of Calgary citizen satisfaction surveys, and it surveys kind of annually what kind of is top of mind for citizens in the city of, within the City of Calgary. And always it's transportation, transit, infrastructure, traffic that is always top of mind for people. And I guess that's not really surprising since, yeah. You know, so much of our day is taken up kind of moving around the city, and it's really seen as one of the primary functions of the City of Calgary.
Yeah.
So can you just explain a little bit about sort of the array of things that lines of business and operations that you handle within the transportation? So I know it spans all the way from planning all the way to, you know, sanding and salting the roads, right?
Yeah, it really is everything from washing a bus stop wall, keeping the transit stations clean. And so we've got people doing that all the way to doing a 60-year transportation plan and city plan, working with our planners, looking at what that long-term vision is. And so our business that we're in really is trying to make people's lives better every day through better mobility. And it's choices whether or not it's things like on the road network. So the City of Calgary has over 16,000 kilometers of roads across the city. And so we have to maintain those, filling potholes, sanding and salting during the winter, looking at spring cleanup, picking up all that sand and salt in the spring. So we have a wide array on just the roadside. From a transit perspective, we move over 100 million people a year on transit, a very successful transit system across the country. We have a major LRT backbone, obviously, with the Red Line and the Blue Line, one of the most successful LRT systems in North America. We have over 1,000 buses in our fleet moving people. So we're very busy there on the transit side. We have a transit planning team that really does look at what are some of the short-term planning objectives, and then the long-term planning objectives, like I said, going out 60 years. And so we're very linked in with the Municipal Development Plan and the Calgary Transportation Plan. And we're actually doing a review of those right now and bringing those two documents together so that there will just be one plan going forward. And so we've got a team that's actively working on that. And we work on things like development approvals as they come in. There's always a transportation component to that. And so we're very busy there. We have a construction arm with transportation infrastructure, where we're looking after the construction of infrastructure across the city. In 2017, we built over 4 interchanges across the city. Mm-hmm. Last year, we opened up hundreds of millions of dollars of transportation infrastructure across the city. So a very busy year for us. Things like the new MAX BRT line, projects across, whether or not it's road projects, cycling projects, pedestrian projects. We always have a lot on the go.
Yeah.
And like you said, we touch, we basically touch everyone every day through some form of transportation, whether or not you're walking, cycling, taking transit, or driving to work. And it's not even just commuting or moving back and forth. People often don't think about goods movement.
Right.
And so we just wrapped up our goods movement strategy, where we're really looking at how do we improve goods movement across the street, everything from those big depots, making it more efficient for trucking in and out, all the way down to deliveries to your door. And so what does that look like? So mm-hmm. we're actively looking at a number of things all across the city every day.
That's great. I wanted to pick up on a couple threads you touched on there, which, you know, some of the major projects that are being undertaken right now. I know your previous role was in director of transportation infrastructure. So you were, you know, a lot of these big projects that we're undertaking right now, you were in your previous role kind of stewarding and shepherding those yeah. major projects. A couple of the big ones, I think, people are really interested in. One is the MAX BRT lines that are just wrapping, or they're underway, or some of them are starting to operate now. Talk yeah. a little bit about what those routes do in the transportation network. And then I want to touch a little bit on Green Line as
sure.
well.
Yeah, so the MAX BRT, obviously, we went into operation in the fall of 2018. We opened up 3 routes running across the city. So we've got the MAX down 17th Avenue Southeast. If you haven't been out there, we've built dedicated bus lanes down the center of 17th Avenue and International Avenue. It's really changed the landscape of that street. I don't know if you've been down there
yeah.
recently or seen it.
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
Completely different. That's really, it's a higher order of bus service. And so really what we're trying to do is get fast, frequent, and reliable transit service out to people as part of our primary transit network without the cost of delivering that through LRT. And so we want to move more people faster, provide great customer experience amenities at those stations. And so if you go down 17th Avenue, I actually really liked it. I went down the other night with my wife, and she was mentioning to me how safe the stations felt.
Yeah.
Because they're fully lit up. We've got CCTV cameras there, help phones, real-time information for customers so they know when the next bus is coming. Those shelters are heated, glass enclosures. So it's almost to the extent of an LRT, but not quite there yet. So a lot better customer amenities instead of waiting on a bus stop on the
yeah.
side of a cold road. And so we really have created that as our backbone. There will ultimately be 4 lines across the city. We're working on the Southwest one right now,
yeah.
Running down 14th Street and then through Mount Royal and ultimately to downtown. That will be opening up this fall of 2019. And at the end of that, we'll have built 90 kilometers of dedicated, I should apologize, it's not all dedicated, but 90 kilometers of BRT infrastructure across the city.
So explain BRT a bit. So it's a bit of a mix of dedicated lanes and other features such as, was like queue jumping on lights. And so what makes a sort of what we define as a BRT versus a regular express bus route or something like that?
Yeah, great question. So we've got dedicated lanes. So on, like I mentioned, 17th Ave South, Southeast right now, we've got the dedicated bus lanes, which are opening. We're building dedicated bus lanes on 14th Street in the Southwest right now. On that project, we've got a bridge underneath 90th Avenue, which will be a bus-only bridge going underneath 90th Avenue. So we're completely separating buses from traffic. At 17th Ave, we've got a bus-only bridge going over top of Deerfoot Trail. Again, completely separating it from traffic to really speed things up in certain highly congested areas. In other areas, we've got technologies such as signal optimization. We've got line of sight signals, so that we've really sped up the signals at those intersections so the buses move through faster.
Yeah.
And queue jumps, like you mentioned. So the bus pulls up to the light, the bus gets a dedicated green light, so it goes first and jumps in front of everyone and gets going going in front of traffic. And it's really trying to speed up the reliability and the speed for the buses moving through.
Talk a little bit about how this ties into the concept of the primary transit network, because I know, you know, in the Calgary Transportation Plan, that was a big driver. And, you know, you go to a lot of cities and it's, you know, it's that speed and reliability and also the frequency of service that really gives that kind of level of freedom. If you go to big cities, it gets to the point where you just don't even need to think about schedule.
These are the
key components of that primary transit network to kind of build it out and create that network or that grid of kind of fast, reliable, frequent routes.
That's right. Yeah. And so the way we've designed it right now, our primary transit network is really defined as that fast, frequent, reliable system. That's anything headway, so the train or the bus is coming every 10 minutes.
Yeah.
We're not quite there yet on the BRT. We've rolled out the service, but we need to increase the frequency to get to that 10-minute service.
Yeah.
So we haven't started there, but we'll be pushing there. And it really is the LRT system right now is set up as a spoken hub. So everything comes through the downtown and goes out of the downtown. That's with the red line, the blue line, and the future green line. The BRT network we've built is a grid over top of that. So really, you don't have to come downtown anymore to get to some of those major destinations. So we've connected it so that you can be on the orange line in the north, and you can go from Saddletown over to Foothills campus without having to go through downtown like you would on the blue line and then transfer into the red line. So really speeding it up for people making those connections across the city.
Yeah. Okay. And so the biggest project we're ever going to undertake probably in the city of Calgary is, of course, the Green Line LRT. So phase one is funded. Stage one is funded. So it takes you roughly from Sheppard to 16th Avenue North.
Yeah.
Where does that sit in the process in terms of its, you know, pre-construction work? You know, when's your kind of schedule? What's your kind of schedule for the kind of opening of that route? And what do you anticipate in terms of the next phases, you know, given some of the announcements around, you know, provincial funding programs that might start up? What's your hope in terms of bringing on beyond stage one as well? Do you think you can bring on the whole line sooner rather than later? Or
great question. I always hear about the everyone always asks about the Green Line. That's a little project, I guess.
Tiny little thing.
Capital budget of $5 billion, and so it is the largest infrastructure project we've ever done. Where we're at right now, we're actually in the ground doing some things that people haven't even noticed. So we've been out doing what we've called enabling works projects. We've been working on those in 2018. We're working on them in 2019. So we're moving utilities out of the way of the main contract that will be coming through. Mm-hmm. We are running through a couple of old landfills. So Highfield in the industrial area, and then Ogden out near the Quarry Park development. And so you can't really build a train on a landfill because the landfill is sinking. And so we had to go in and move out those old landfills. And so we've gone and done a lot of work moving that out and starting some construction around that. And we're also right now starting construction in some of the heavy rail corridor, which we'll be running, actually starting to pre-build some infrastructure in there. And so we've actually got a number of small projects going right now, but the big project is still to come. And so we're going out to engage with contractors very shortly. We'll be out in Q2 of 2019, starting that process with them. So it's what's called a request for qualifications. We're gonna go out to market, get essentially proposals in from bid teams, contractors and consortiums who wanna do this project for us. We'll select a few and then we'll go out to market with them. We'll take a couple of years to get through that whole process, and then we'll start construction. And we really want to have this project open in 2026. And so that will be trains running from, like you said, at the South End Sheppard or 130th Avenue, 126th Avenue in the south up to the north at 16th Avenue. And so it's about 20 kilometers, stage one, $5 billion opening day. It should serve between 60 to 65,000 Calgarians on a daily basis. And so it'll be a great first stage to really anchor the Green Line and then allow extensions from there. And so what does stage two look like? That's always a question we get.
Yeah.
Going north, we've planned it to go up Center Street. And so we've already done some of the planning work there, some of the community engagement. We have to do a lot of land acquisition. There's a lot of small pieces in front of people's homes or businesses that we impact. So there's quite a number of properties we have to acquire up there, a lot of utility relocations, and it's a lot more capital money. So we're still looking for funding for that. And then south of Shepherd, we're very close to communities like Mackenzietown. It's only two stations away. And so we're always trying to find out how we can get down there to serve the population that's growing down there as well. So, and then ultimately, the Green Line is 46 kilometers in length. So in the south, it goes all the way down to Seton, and that community is rapidly building out right now. Obviously, the South Health Campus, that's down there. Big draw from a medical facility, and there's a lot of development happening down there right now, too.
Another piece of major infrastructure people will be familiar with often on their daily commute is the Crowchild-Bow interchange work that's going on. This has long been a bit of suffering for Calgary commuters. It's a bit of an odd duck of an interchange that was designed kind of generations ago. This is the first stage in trying to kind of fix that quagmire over the Bow River on Crowchild Trail. You're in construction on phase one. Talk a little bit about what that'll do to that corridor.
Yeah, so it's a like you say, it's a short-term project where we're adding another core lane on Crowchild Trail across the Bull River. So there'll ultimately be three core lanes going across in each direction, and that we appreciate everyone's patience as we've been working on that project. It's obviously been a fairly extensive project for us. We're going in and on those existing bridges that sat there, we're adding another lane onto them. And so we had to go and reinforce the existing structure underneath those, put thousands of kilometers of rebar and concrete doweling in to really build that out and make it strong enough to take those future lanes. And so that work's been ongoing right now. And I know that a number of people have been impacted by our detours, so I thank you for your putting up with our construction as we've worked.
But it is amazing how functional it is, even in the middle of a construction project. I've driven across it a number of times. It must be a really complex project to manage.
It's an extremely difficult one, especially when you look at the number of bridges that are going across that area. Tens of thousands of Calgarians who commute on through that area on a daily basis. That really is one of the north-south spines for Calgarians to get across the river on the west side of downtown. And so we appreciate that. We've tried to design it in such a way that we would keep traffic moving, not only traffic, also pedestrians and cyclists on the pathways underneath. Mm-hmm. We did have to do some closures because we are doing so much work under there. We had to close things for certain durations. And there's a number of stakeholders in the area, businesses. There's also the heavy rail, the CP line that runs underneath. So if you want to talk about a complex area, extremely complex area, we've been working at it quickly with our team. And I think that they've been doing a great job. And I just really appreciate Calgarians putting up with the work out there. And we're excited to see it opening this fall. And it'll really, I hope, make that commute a lot better for people.
Good stuff. So those are some of the big ticket stuff. You touched a little bit on a refresh or an update or kind of a harmonization a little bit more with the Calgary Transportation Plan and the Municipal Development Plan. You know, this is an area that, you know, this is the driving policy of the City of Calgary. So these are some of the underpinnings of the directions we want to go with our transportation and our land use. And a lot of the language has been about, you know, trying to decrease automobile dependency. Doesn't mean the automobile is going away, but to try and increase the quote unquote sort of the mode share, the percentage of Calgarians getting around, you know, for commutes and for just daily trips on transit, pedestrian, and cycle. My feeling has always sort of been with that question is, if we create a city that's just so utterly dependent on cars, it seems to work badly, just including and especially for people driving. If everyone else is driving, you're driving, it's going to be, you can't really build your way out of that sort of thing. So the only way to create a more functional system is to try and kind of spread that mode share across all four modes as much as possible. Of course, that takes a lot of commitment to building transit and improving cycling facilities and pedestrian orientation of how we build our city. How do you see that? You know, we're sort of 10 years into that plan. How do you see our city in terms of kind of progress on that front to date? And kind of in the refresh of the plan, how do you see that question about sort of that mode share split kind of evolving over the next generation?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think when you look back over the last 10 years, I think we've made great leaps in the city and the transportation network. And when you look at the amount of transit investment that we've had, so the West, things like the West LRT have come online, extensions in the Northeast to McKnight Westwinds to Saddletown. In the South, we were sort of at the beginning of that 10-year, we were wrapping up extensions that had taken us further south. And then to the Northwest, obviously, in the last 10 years, we've opened up extensions to projects like Crowfoot and Tuscany, really getting that line farther out. Things like, it's amazing. I've always been amazed, Josh, things, when you look at the ridership on the Red Line in the mm-hmm. South, well over 100,000 people a day on that line.
Yeah.
You look at some of the roads like Deerfoot Trail. So some segments of Deerfoot Trail carrying well over 100,000 as well. Look at the size of that infrastructure, how congested that is. And then compare that to the size of the transit facility. Yeah. And if you think about if we didn't have that transit facility there, moving all those people, you're right.
Yeah.
How many cars would that be on the road?
Yeah, you just physically cannot fit them.
Exactly.
In the space you have.
Yeah. And all the congestion associated with it. So,
yeah.
So I think we've made great leaps and bounds in transit. From a cycling perspective, I'm amazed that we've made a number of investments and obviously the downtown cycle track network, what was the pilot, and now we've turned it into the permanent installation. We've started building additional cycling facilities around the city, whether or not it's bike lanes on street or dedicated cycling facilities. I've been amazed to look back at the data on the growth of cycling across the city. It seems like wherever you build cycling facilities, ridership is going up, and we're seeing great outcomes from that. And so we're not trying to push people into cycling or walking or transit. We want to provide choices for everyone.
Yeah.
And it's really about providing choices for everyone so that if you want to walk, cycle, or take transit, you feel safe and comfortable doing it. You can quickly move to where you want to be, and you have connectivity and connection options for it. And so that's what we've always been focused on. I think we've made great progress over the last 10 years. Moving forward into the next refresh, it really was the Calgary Transportation Plan is coming up on 10 years. It was time to review that and refresh it. And we had some good conversations internally in the city, really saying the link between land use and transportation is so strong that we started to align the plans last time. So they looked the same, they followed the same format. And the discussion was, why don't we just have one plan that really integrates land use and transportation? Because those decisions are very linked, and we should just have one plan that we refer to instead of going back and forth, so that we create one vision for the Calgary that we want.
Yeah.
And then we all work together to achieve that.
Good stuff. You touched a little bit on cycling, and you know, I was certainly, you know, sort of personally involved in some of the early days of cycle tracks. It's a tough one. You talked about, you know, being able to provide the choice, but part of, I think, the difficulty often with introducing that kind of infrastructure is you're kind of retrofitting or changing a street, and people view it as sort of maybe taking away something, whether it be parking or transportation capacity. It's a difficult thing to endeavor, but the data seems to show that, you know, if you do build it and you build it thoughtfully, people will once the choice is provided, they'll use it to a reasonable degree. So what do you think, you know, we've gone through this sort of first tranche of building the cycle track. We have a few key routes in and out of downtown. What do you see kind of coming in the next, you know, next budget cycle, next 10 years in terms of building out that network and kind of improving that choice? What's sort of on the horizon for cycling?
Yeah, we're going to continue investing in cycling infrastructure. And it's interesting, it's not a fit for every community. And I think that's one of the things we've realized over the last few years as well. We've got communities that are coming into my office and begging for dedicated cycling infrastructure. And it really fits with the community and the population and the origin destination. It really makes sense. And so we'll be investing in infrastructure in those areas.
Yeah.
And focusing our attention in the coming years on those areas. Cycling's it's interesting because it's picking up throughout the year. So winter cycling's becoming more attractive for some Calgarians as there's dedicated cycling facilities and
just as the bike share programs.
And yeah, things like the bike share program and even the let's be realistic, the weather. It's supposed to be 10 degrees tomorrow,
pretty good,
Josh.
Yeah.
And so the weather is we're in January and great weather in Calgary. So we do have the climate that you can do it at different times. We're actually having the Winter Cycling Congress in Calgary in February.
Well, hopefully it's snow for that.
That's right. Yeah, we do hope that there's some snow for that. But we're seeing a number of winter cities that are investing more in cycling infrastructure. And it's a very small amount of money that we invest when you look at the overall transportation budget.
Yeah, it's sort of, I think it's often, it's sort of blown out of proportion often. It's the budget is relatively small. The amount of actual road space across the city is minute. That's actually used, but it's proportionate to the amount of users. Actually, the amount of users kind of are out, disproportionate to the amount of money that's invested or the amount of space that's taken. Yeah, it still becomes a big kind of hullabaloo often just because of, on a local scale, what's happening on a person's particular street. It's an interesting issue in transportation to try and balance sort of the bigger picture versus immediate interest.
Yeah, and we have that on not just our cycling projects. We have that on all of our projects.
Sure.
If we're going to put a bus stop in front of people's homes, we always have conversations around that as well. And I get it. It's like you mentioned, the citizen satisfaction survey, transportation's always up at the top because we do touch people's lives every day, whether or not you're using the infrastructure or whether or not that infrastructure is running right in front of your business or your home, it can have an impact. And so very cognizant of that. And we're always working to get better. The things like the Center City Cycle pilot that we put out, we learned a lot from that. We made some adjustments as we went along on that. We're not done learning from that. I think there's still adjustments we can make to improve the way that works. And it's about trying to balance everything, balancing things like parking, cycling, pedestrian connections, and traffic and travel lanes, and making sure that everyone has those options to get through.
Great. I want to talk a little bit about one of the hot topics that's kind of come up recently, and it's a little bit tied to the questions of public safety and the safety of being a pedestrian in the city and just traffic safety generally. But that's the topic of residential speed limits. It's something that's come up recently. The city's evaluating a motion to look at, 30 kilometer an hour, 40 kilometer an hour, the appropriateness of what speed, where, versus the existing. Give us a little bit of an update on where that is. And I'd love to just hear your perspective a little bit about the question of the use of speed limits as a tool to manage public safety versus, if you look at a lot of, Vision Zero movements and stuff like that, they'll talk a lot about speed limits being a fairly limited tool in terms of how much they can actually influence speed versus how a road is designed and what drivers see on the road and how they respond to that environment in terms of their travel speed.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about speed limits and traffic safety.
Yeah, so it's obviously a big.
We have lots of time.
That's so right. Yeah, it's a big topic, and so where we're at in the process, we're coming back to council in Q1 with an update on some of the components of the study, and then we'll really be back in the fall of 2019 with some of our recommendations on it. And so we're working away in the background on it. We have a traffic safety specialist in our team. We have a number of people who focus on that.
Yeah.
And so I agree. Traffic speed limits are one tool, but they're an important tool.
Yeah.
And so as part of Vision Zero, a number of people do look at what the speed limit is because really the injury severity involved in people in collisions and also passengers in vehicles dramatically increases as speed increases. And so I think all of us want to have safe communities, but we also want to have quick convenient mobility.
Yeah.
And so the question is, how do we balance that? And how do we ensure that we can work to achieving both of those? And really, what is the impact to your commute? When you look at some of the residential speed limit reductions, if you're looking at someone's commute, if your commute is 25 or 30 minutes, and you're looking at a reduction of adding 2 or 3 minutes onto that to improve, to help improve the quality of the safety in your own neighborhood, I think a lot of people would probably get on board with that.
Yeah.
But everyone's always worried about slowing down their commute. And so we need some real data around what that looks like. And so our team's out there working on that right now. Also some real data around where injuries are and how we help prevent that. And like you say, speed limit's one tool. The design of the street is another one. The lane widths, the features beside the street. There's a number of traffic calming pieces that we're going in retrofitting some of these wider community streets, which really allow people to move quickly because it's just comfortable to move quickly.
Enough. Yeah, this is sort of one of the paradoxes that you have with traffic speed is that if you have a tighter, more constrained, more complex kind of environment, trees, street parking, narrow lanes, you know, you would think on the surface that would be maybe less safe because, you know, there's visibility issues, but the kind of natural human response to that kind of environment is to slow down, which on a net effect is safer. You know, your response time to stopping is much quicker. And then on the other hand, you know, some of the big kind of over-engineered roads we've built, kind of especially on, you know, collectors and arterials, you know, they're wide open. You can kind of see, but it induces a sort of speed or high speed. You know, as it relates to the speed limit conversation, I know like part of the conversation is about just pure, truly local residential roads. But we also have these, you know, where a lot of the speeding is happening is on those kind of community collectors. You know, is there some logic of maybe kind of harmonizing, you know, the speed limit between the collectors and the local road, maybe that middle ground, that 40 km/h speed, just, you know, for simplicity's sake and understanding what your local speed limit is? And then affect maybe a wider array of streets, including some of those trouble spots on some of those big wide collectors. And then maybe in the long term follow up with some of the design changes so that people kind of more naturally slow down. I think part of the issue people have when they think about a speed limit like 30 and they think about a big wide road is it just feels unnaturally slow to be on given the environment that they have. So it feels like if we just do speed limits or we just do that, I'm not sure how the public response is going to be if we apply those kinds of really low speed limits to really big streets. What do you make of that?
You've hit the exact conversation we're having, Josh. And you should just come work with us.
Okay.
That's the exact.
Well, and citizens are thinking about it too. A lot, like a lot of people, it's a big question. So.
And I think we all commute every day. And so we're all thinking the same thing. And the question is, do we want to harmonize our speed limits and have one consistent one across the city in those communities? But that will potentially be too quick in some areas and too slow in other areas.
Yeah.
And so, how do we look at the context sensitivity of the specific area?
Yeah. And then you have to think about practical questions like signage and all these sorts of things.
And
right?
Still keeping it so that it's consistent, not confusing for people as well. And so those are the pieces that we're evaluating right now. I don't think there's one answer or one right solution. There's a spectrum within there. And so we're looking at that spectrum and we're trying to come up with what the issues are and have the conversation with council and Calgarians and then bring a recommendation back. And I completely agree. There's those operation pieces like signage and some of those other pieces that people don't really think about. But if you look at different speed limits across the city, thousands of signs we have to go put out, maintain, and then people find it confusing as well. Was I in a 30 zone and now 40 and then back to 30? Like, we want to make it consistent so it's easier for people to understand. And then there's our own behaviors as well. So we can only do so much from the speed limit perspective, from the engineering perspective. There's also the behaviors that we all have to do, understanding that we should go slower in some areas.
Yeah.
And there's that personal responsibility that we have to have as well.
I was going to talk about snow removal, but since it hasn't snowed all winter, I don't think I'll talk about that. You probably hear enough about that, but maybe next time if we have a super snowy winter. But I want to look a little bit to the future to kind of finish off. And, you know, there's a lot of technological change happening in mobility, especially with autonomous vehicles. You know, that could apply to both single occupancy vehicles, but it also could eventually apply to things like transit and stuff like that. Depending on who you talk to, this thing is imminent, or it's so complex in terms of mixing and matching with human behavior and the environment and the complexities of an urban place that it might be decades away.
Yeah.
We don't know, but we do need to start thinking about how it might affect our mobility. So how are you thinking about those types of questions about how they might affect, you know, because there's all sorts of possibilities, like car ownership might go down. It might be much more of a, you know, a shared kind of fleet that you subscribe to, you know, yeah. Transit might look different. Like, you know, you might have a hub and spoke model of an LRT, but, you know, the way the buses circulate with autonomous technology might totally change. Who knows? How are you thinking about these questions, especially when you're thinking about crafting, you know, transportation plans and, you know, you have all sorts of lines of business that this could affect in transportation.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. We think about it a lot. And it's interesting that even I'd step back for a second. Earlier, you brought up the new bike share program that's rolled out, the pilot for bike share. And you look at that. So we've got bikes outside the library where we're at right now, where you can go out and use your cell phone to unlock a ride share essentially through a bike, use that within an area and pay for it electronically. So simple things like cycling, and you can look at how that shared economy and how technology are changing that, how that works for that last mile connection. So if you want to take transit and you have to walk a number of blocks, you can now take transit, get off, do a bike share, take that and leave the bike. And that was at no cost to the city. And so a few years ago, when we were looking at a bike share program, we were looking at millions of dollars to bring this on board. There wasn't the appetite to do that.
Yeah, it was better in that case to just wait till the private sector kind of caught up and was ready to make the investment. That was a smart decision for sure.
For sure. And so you look at things like that. And so that's on a small scale. And then on a larger scale, like you talked about, autonomous vehicles, what does that mean for the future of transportation? That's the discussion everyone's having. We've been looking at that for a number of years now. We've had people dedicated to running some models for what happens when autonomous vehicles do come on? What does that mean? There's a number of different discussions out there because autonomous vehicles, while it could be a lot better for us, we're also looking at these vehicles now driving more kilometers. And so some of the discussions actually increase vehicle kilometer travel because vehicles are driving with no one in them to go to the next spot. Right. And so it's an interesting sort of paradox when you think about this technology we all originally thought would reduce auto traffic could actually increase it.
Yeah.
And so,
and that's, I think, where transit and using that, you know, we're working with Peter Calthorpe on our Providence project, and he's brought up this exact point. It's like, actually, it could make things worse if we don't think through this very carefully. So we actually have to look at it in sort of, you know, almost like a mass transit lens as well, to supplement those vehicle miles trip with more efficient movement of people, you know, in vehicles.
Yeah. So we look at it as the last mile or the connection after that mass haul that your mass transit system is. And so we've been doing a lot of work on that. And we've actually been working with a lot of local companies as well. People may not know this, but we had the Ella, the first autonomous vehicle in Western Canada, which ran between the zoo and the science center, which was running in the fall of 2018. And so a fully autonomous shuttle running between the science center, the Telespark, and the zoo, just to see what does that look like. And so we were working on that with folks from the University of Calgary.
Yeah.
And there's also a number of people within Calgary, businesses developing sensor technology that's going to run some of this autonomous these autonomous systems. Their technology was on that vehicle because Calgary is actually a hotbed for sensor technology developed through the oil industry, and now it's being applied in autonomous vehicles.
Yeah, it could be, you know, it's a new frontier. It could be somewhere where we latch on to and help kind of grow our economy. You know, it's going to touch everything, even how we think about parking and how we store vehicles might totally change in the future if it's become so convenient to just hail a shared kind of vehicle. You don't need parking. You need less parking or less personal or private parking. And that could totally change how land use functions and all these sorts of things. But so it'll be a very interesting kind of transitional period to think about these questions.
Yeah, and it's even things like, so we're having that thought and that conversation. So the new parkade that we're building on 9th Avenue, right across from the Central Library, started construction the last few weeks. And so we planned and designed that so that that structure can be convertible. Because what happens in 25 years if we don't need parking and we've built a parkade that has a 75-year life?
Yeah.
What do we do with that building? And all so right. We've already started thinking about how do we start to design and build some of this infrastructure so that it can convert over to other uses. So we've already designed that building that we can convert it to offices in the future if we need to. So we're doing some of that pre-thinking right now so that we're not stranding those investments in the future. At the same time, how long will it take for that transition to happen?
It's hard to say.
So yeah. We want to ensure that we're providing for where we're at right now while starting to think about what that future looks like.
That's awesome. Well, Michael, I really appreciate the conversation. And certainly it's, as we talked about, always top of mind for people. So congratulations on the new position and good luck.
Great. Thanks very much, Josh.
All right. Common Ground YYC is a production of Livewire Calgary. If you value quality local journalism, please just consider supporting Livewire by following it on social media, by clicking and reading stories, advertising, or contributing directly via Patreon. Visit livewirecalgary.com.